Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the November 9 edition of Commodity Week. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason, our panelist, and really I talk to them individually on this edition of the program. Are Arlen Suderman, he's with FC Stone, and Bill Turney with Ag Resource Company. Just a quick reminder that coming up on the 20th day of this month, and that's not very far away now, is our Farm Assets Conference, and I'd like you to pick up a ticket for it. This should be a really good program, and I'm more convinced than ever that it's one you need to be in the seats for. The cost is just $40. After being here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention all week, sustainability and the look forward and the way the marketing process is going to change over the next 10 years is clearly the pace at which the rest of the industry is thinking about the marketplace. We'll take a close look at that with a couple of very large companies, Anheuser-Busch and McDonald's. We have a vice president of procurement and a senior director of their global supply chain coming in, and put it in context of the way you, the commodity farmer, will be working with them far more directly in the future. It is imperative that you be at this conference. Pick your tickets up now at 1-800-898-1065 or farmassetsconference.com. The cost is just $40, and it's Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, so that's about a week and a few days away. Buy those tickets now. Now up next, Commodity Week. Bill Turney from Ag Resource Company now joins us to talk about the commodity markets. He was here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention and made a presentation on marketing and prices of corn, soybeans, wheat, other products to the NAFB members. Bill, you went through some of the fundamentals, and because those may or may not have changed with the WASDE report on Thursday morning, let's stick with the things that aren't going to change a whole lot, I think, though we never know. There's just a really large supply of soybeans, and corn looks a little better. I think you showed us that at the NAFB. Tell me about what your current thinking is as it relates to both of these products and maybe the world stocks.
Well, let's start off with, I think the good news. The good news is that I think we've seen the low in the corn market. I think the USDA's expectation of record U.S. corn exports on top of last year's record U.S. corn exports, I think that's a reasonable expectation. However, I'm a little bit concerned that the pace of global corn exports really doesn't match the expectation. Last year, at this time, in the month of October, we had, I think, about 11 million metric tons of total corn exports, the principal exports. This year, we're about 11.2. So I would like to see the pace of total global corn exports pick up, because it's anticipated that if demand is as strong as USDA says it is, it's going to come to the United States. And I think it's that demand plus seasonal factors that's likely to pull up corn prices and hopefully give farmers some better pricing opportunities for the 2019 crop. It's anticipated that next year's corn seedings will be up from this year. It's anticipated that corn exports will be down, because we're looking at the likelihood of very large South American crops that will be competing with U.S. corn next fall. So if we see very strong exports out of South America next fall and we see larger U.S. corn seedings, I think we're going to see lower U.S. corn prices next fall than we saw this year. But between now and then, I think prices are going to be going up, old and new crop, and that should give farmers an opportunity to do some pricing of the 2019 crop.
I'll repeat that because it's important. Your view is that if you're going to market the 2019 crop, maybe better sooner rather than later, depending on what happens with, in particularly, the Brazilian safrinha crop, corn. You gave us an acronym during the presentation, ABU, which stands for Argentina, Brazil, and Ukraine, and is related to corn on the global stage. Why do you pick those three countries?
Well, in 2012, Brazil was the world's largest corn exporter. If you take a look at Argentina, Brazil, and the Ukraine, I think three or four out of the last 5 years, they've had over half of the total world's U.S. corn, world's corn exports. And that's a relatively recent phenomenon. We have clearly seen South America become the dominant exporter of soybeans and soy meal. And certainly wheat producers have seen, certainly since 2001-2002, we've seen a shift in the relative importance of the U.S. as a wheat exporter. Back when I first started in this business back in 1981, the U.S. was the world's largest exporter, accounting for roughly 55, maybe 57% of total wheat trade. The former Soviet Union was the world's largest wheat importer, and we totally reversed that situation. In several of the last 3 to 5 years, the U.S. has only been the fourth largest exporter, even smaller than Canada. So I think there's a lot of long-term pressure on U.S. corn sector from increasing competition from, as I said, the ABUs, with a lot of that competition coming from Brazil. But I also want to point out a very significant expansion of production in the Ukraine. This year, the Ukraine is expected to have a record crop and record exports, and it may well be that the USDA is underestimating the size of this year's Ukrainian crop.
How does the reallocation of the export market for any particular commodity happen, in your opinion? And is it a slow process, or is it kicked off by events?
All right. In the case of 2012, the reason why Brazil was the world's largest exporter was because in the United States, we suffered the worst drought in 50 years. We just didn't have the corn to sell. At the same time, Brazil had, I think, a record crop and certainly very attractive prices. So if the prices were high enough and you have the supply, then you get market share. But you bring up a very interesting question, and I'd like to have our listeners perhaps check out some documents on University of Illinois' FarmDoc. There is a series of publications been done over the last several years on international comparisons of costs of production on the FarmDoc website. I think the lead author is a faculty member at the university at Purdue. His name is Michael Langemeyer. If you take a look at those, they look at costs of production and returns for corn, soybeans, and wheat from the world's principal exporters, the European Union, Ukraine, Russia, Brazil, Argentina, Canada, the United States, and I think they even look at Iowa and Illinois returns, you'll see that relatively consistently over time, the U.S. has not been the low-cost producer, and U.S. farmers have not received the highest net returns. We've seen very good returns to corn and soybean production in Brazil and Argentina that clearly has incentivized increased production there. So for a variety of reasons, one of which includes currency exchange, currency changes. Lower currency makes it more profitable. A higher currency makes it less profitable. So part of the burden that U.S. producers have had to shoulder is in part due to a strong dollar, part of the advantage that Russian farmers, Brazilian farmers, Argentine farmers have had in terms of the overall profitability of crop agriculture has been due to their weaker currencies. So some of it has to do with purely agricultural economics, cost of land, cost of labor. Some of it has to do with macroeconomics, which drive changes in currency exchange rates. Some people have said that U.S. agriculture won't recover in a significant way or achieve improved competitiveness until the value of the dollar goes down. And that's a question that you'll have to put to a macroeconomist, and I'm not one of those.
Well, let's stay with stocks to use then, but switch to soybeans, because whether you're talking about the U.S. supply or versus demand or the world supply versus demand, this is an ugly situation.
Well, it is. We have a record crop for soybeans in this year. USDA is projecting we're going to have record absolute ending stocks. We've never had stocks this large. And in terms of stocks to use ratio, you have to go back some 25 years to find a time when stocks to use were projected to be this large at this time of year. If you broaden your perspective a little bit and say, well, since South America is so important, the dominant producer of soybeans and soy meal, the world's largest exporter of soybeans and soy meal, what if we include South American stocks in the analysis? Well, if we look at combined stocks to use of the United States, Brazil, and Argentina, which represent 92% of total global soybean and soy meal trade, those three countries are expected to have record stocks as of the end of January of this year. I picked the end of January because that's just before February 1, which is the beginning of the marketing, local marketing year for Brazil soybeans. And I think it's April 1 or March 1, which is the beginning of the marketing year for Argentina. So just before the majority of the world's soybeans are harvested, we are expecting to see over 100 million metric tons of stocks available in those three countries. And then you add on top of that what is currently projected to be a record South American crop. So I'm very concerned that record supplies and near record stocks to use ratios are likely to mean significantly lower soybean prices than what we have now if we don't see a resolution of the trade dispute between the U.S. and China.
So it is possible, and you do this, others do this fairly often, to take that supply and demand and put it into some curves and come up with some projections. What do they show?
Well, one of the better performing price models, and I say better performing in terms of its statistical properties, is to look at how low January soybean futures get in October, December, relative to how large the G3 stocks are. By G3, I mean U.S., Brazil, and Argentina. That model suggests that with expected stocks, we could see soybean prices well below the $7 level, simply based on supply and demand relationships as we believe them to be now. If, however, we get a trade agreement, I think we could probably get up to the $10.50 level on basis January futures. So if President Trump and if President Xi of China do arrive at a resolution, which includes a lifting of the tariff, a lifting of the implicit embargo on U.S. soybeans, and perhaps even a commitment from China to buy even more U.S. soybeans, then I think we've seen the low in the market. Without that, I think these huge stocks that we have and anticipate having are just going to push prices lower.
How important is that last part of your sentence, not the without that, but the commitment part, the commitment of a purchase to a trade agreement to make things happen?
I leave that up to the market to weigh President Xi's commitments in a trade agreement. Maybe the market will take him at his word and say, if they say they're going to buy X amount of soybeans from the United States, in addition to the U.S. traditional market share, which is roughly 35% of their imports, if they say that, then we'll take him at his word. If, on the other hand, the market says, well, I won't believe the sales until I start seeing the sales appear in the export sales report.
And finally, just to recap that, the upside potential, not nearly as great as the downside losses at this point.
Again, it depends on what level of commitment China makes by crop and over what time period. Some people have said that, well, China will make a commitment if prices are competitive. Well, that doesn't really improve U.S. competitiveness relative to Brazilian. But if China waives the if prices are competitive clause, if they waive that and say, we will import X number regardless of price, then clearly U.S. soybeans will be in a very advantageous position.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You're welcome.
Bill Tierney is with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Arlen Suderman now joins us. He is with F.C. Stone and caught up with him at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention on Wednesday afternoon, so before the USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimate reports were released. I think maybe we should talk, Harlan, a little bit about the trade and tariffs and the impact it has had on the marketplace, what you see over the next several months, and the way this may play out.
Well, first of all, the world is oversupplied in soybeans, or at least will be as soon as we have a South American crop, assuming there's no weather that develops here over the next 60 to 90 days in Brazil and Argentina. So the market needs to discourage expansion of soybean acres. And there may be a lot of bankers out there who want farmers to go toward soybeans with lower input costs. Market needs to make sure that doesn't happen. On the corn side, we see some brighter opportunities down the road. I don't want to get anyone thinking $6 or $7 corn, but we do have a tightening world balance sheet. I expect USDA is too tight and has been too tight in reflecting that. So we need to have a bearish adjustment, and then we'll start to see how things are really tightening up and we're moving toward more biofuel production, particularly in East Asia and China, that we need to provide for. That doesn't mean another commodity boom. Those come around every 30 to 35 years, but it does provide some more opportunities. So it seems to be that we're shifting soybean production south of the equator and gives us some opportunity maybe to fit some of the corn production. Transportation inefficiencies make it a little bit more difficult for Brazil to compete in that arena. The Black Sea is certainly trying to ramp up corn production as well, which I think means that, you know, prices appreciate higher, but don't get out of, you know, too crazy to the high side.
So you've made some producers happy because in America, farmers like to put corn in the ground. That's mm-hmm. their favorite crop. There was a point at which many had thought that South America would raise soybeans and North America would raise corn. This trade and tariff dispute appears to be reallocating, I guess, in your opinion, some of those acres in that form. And is it coarse grains as well? Because I would think that wheat would have to come back up in the Western Corn Belt, the Dakotas potentially, and maybe in Kansas again.
Yeah, one of the challenges of wheat is it's like a weed and how it grows, and it's growing around the world, so many different places. And while our dollar is strong, we have so many competing places that grow crops that have a very cheap currency, and wheat in particular is very sensitive to that. So we are looking for a little bit of a rebound in wheat acres. We expected something in the neighborhood of 5 to 10% increase, and our client survey, which we just completed this week now, says that'll be closer to around 2.5% increase in wheat acres. A lot of that was reduced simply because of adverse weather this fall, especially in the plains where it was simply too wet and it's gotten too late, and so we're not going to get the double crop that we expected, etc. But the shift from soybeans to corn, I think, is something that's going to happen. As we look at 2019, our survey shows corn acres rising to around 91.2 million acres, while we see about a 5% drop in soybean acres. That's going to be the trend overall, and of course the market's going to cause that to shift one way or the other, maybe several times between now and spring planting.
Will we have to develop a whole bunch of export markets to take care of corn in the future, or can we export it out as finished ethanol, for instance?
Well, this goes back to the China trade war and whether President Trump will actually be able to change their behavior. And by change behavior, it has to do with far more than the trade deficit. They would have been willing to come to an agreement to narrow the trade deficit last May. He's trying to stop their military expansion. particularly like in the South China Sea and elsewhere, and a number of other practices, intellectual property rights, stealing that and stuff. In the end, we'll probably, once we get a deal, and I think it's going to be probably more drawn out than what people like, I do think that we will narrow the trade gap. It'll probably be more favorable to corn, to crude oil, liquefied natural gas, and perhaps ethanol. And maybe not so much for soybeans. I think soybeans were on their way shifting to South America anyway, and I think we have probably sped that process up. But I think there will be some opportunities with their dependence, their growing dependence on ethanol there and in other parts of the world, that's where the demand would go. But first and foremost, the most significant demand would be corn and or ethanol going to China as we look at the next 2 to 3 years.
What are your thoughts on marketing the 2019 crop in this case, given where you think we will stand with the trade and tariff and a longer-term settlement, meaning not in the next month or month and a half, but sometime in the next 6 months to a year, I assume?
Yeah, when you really look at the carry built into the market, which happened, and by that I mean the premium of those deferred contracts, which happens because we have a surplus of supplies, you've got to look at that as an opportunity to be pricing ahead and at least incrementally selling and hope that you sell the rest for more. And when we look at soybeans, the hedge funds are so short or sold in the soybean market. And when you look at U.S. supplies being $2 cheaper, $1.90 to $2, it's been narrowing here of late, than Brazilian supplies. If we were to get a trade deal tomorrow, all of a sudden we'd have huge demand for soybeans at that cheaper price and short covering by the funds. We could get a tremendous spike in the price, but every farmer's going to want to sell that type of thing because we still have too many soybeans. So that's your upside risk in a position, and if you're an end user or a farmer taking positions, but the downside risk remains there. The last time we had stocks to use percentage that we do have now for soybeans, we had a marketing year average cash price more with a 4 in front of it instead of an 8 in front of it. On the corn side, we're going to have our ups and downs, but I think the longer term trend is going to be slowly higher over the next 6 months to a year. We may have a sharp bearish adjustment of another as much as 30 cents or so when USDA fully acknowledges the size of China's reserve. But once that is done, I think the markets start to recognize how far it's falling and slowly move higher again.
On that note, China has been talking a little bit about the size of that reserve. I know you've looked at it, and they made an announcement, if I recall correctly, on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, they increased the size of the crops over the last 10 years, most notably the last couple of years by 20%. Increases both in area and yield, and on the face value, that looks tremendously bearish, and we're looking to USDA now to follow suit on that. But that's just getting the balance sheet to add up because their reserves are so high. How could they be so high without more production? Because we know demand is strong. So that's just going to be a bookkeeping thing now to get it up there. The bottom line is that when you look at, they have auctioned off 100 million metric tons since April without virtually any detrimental effect on cash prices in China. They've now suspended that while they use new crop supplies. We expect they'll start up again in the spring, and in the last half of next year, they will run out of supplies if our numbers are right, and they're going to need to go elsewhere for corn. So it looks like an initial very bearish reaction followed by a more friendly reaction over longer time.
Arlen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Arlen Suderman from FC Stone and Bill Tierney. He is with Ag Resource Company. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.